Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing fine, doing fine. Good. I think we'll follow up and talk about our favorite Secretary of State today, a little bit about Pompeo, but not directly in as much as we did yesterday. It seems like there were a lot of people interested in what Pompeo had to say.
Yeah, show did well.
I'll tell you what. That is something, not that we should be surprised, you know, but to find out that it's literally policy and they're taught lie, cheat, and steal, that's beyond it. You'd think they'd have enough common sense to not brag about it. But anyway, hopefully a few people wake up from it. But today I want to talk a little bit about the announcement about Kim and Putin getting together, you know, a summit. But it also brings to mind immediately, well, he's talking to us. Is he talking to both? Well, he used to be talking to us. And there was some progress. It seemed like Trump was actually pretty sincere. And it was moving along, and they were getting along. He was Trump didn't call him as many names. All of a sudden, he's my friend.
My
he's
buddy.
A nice guy. And all of a sudden, it changed. And as we reported before, it was when Bolton showed up at the conference and changed the whole thing and said, no way.
Yeah.
And they would not proceed. It's been put on hold. North Korea has gone back not to manufacturing nuclear weapons or anything, but to build some weapons, which most countries do. The big hang up before was that Trump said, oh, well, we can't do it, or at least the neocons' position was, we can't do it because you said, or we said, you had to get rid of all your nukes. And of course, there was some disagreement on who said what when. But the door was not slammed, but it was closing because it was put into our ballpark to respond, and we refused to respond, even though Kim had expressed himself. We wanted to continue this, you know, but it looks like that's ended, so he's turned elsewhere. And if you look at things geopolitically, the world is changing. I think we're losing power and influence, and there's others gathering together to fill the void, and I think we're seeing Kim, who I think honestly thought that he could gain some advantages by being more reasonable with us. My suspicion is he probably wants to be a communist like the Chinese and see some growth in the economy. So they we expected that to happen, but then Kim just gave up to it, and this is the result. Summit. And there was a grand reception there. He's in Vladivostok right now. There will be this. He wants to talk about bilateral agreements with Russia, but which is going to include China. So since China and Russia is getting along a little bit better than they did in the old days, you know, this sort of fits into the mold of the people who want to build giant highways into Europe and have alternatives to the currency and making sure that that Iran gets to sell oil once again without so much trouble with the United States. So I think there's a major realignment going, and I suspect this at least is symbolic of it. You say, North Korea, they don't amount to much, you know, and matter of fact. But, you know, I keep thinking and hoping that if it did work, it would bring North and South together. So if there is a real opening here for them to become more important with Russia, it may involve a unified Korea, for all we know.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, you're right, the U.S. is losing influence, you know, and it's incredible to see. But it's the neocons who are hastening this process. They're accelerating the process of our losing influence. And one of the reasons is really it's a crisis in our foreign policy. Nobody believes they can do a deal with the U.S. anymore. They don't believe that the U.S. will live up to its agreements, which it doesn't. It didn't live up to its Iran agreements, as you pointed out earlier. And, you know, there was an understanding between Kim and Trump at their last meeting that this is an incremental process, that the U.S. and North Korea will have kind of a, you do this move and we do this move. Shut down this military base and we'll give you a little bit of sanctions relief. And this is how it was supposed to go. And what blew up the summit in February was, as you say, Bolton, who wasn't even supposed to be there, he showed up. He handed Trump a piece of paper to hand to Kim. And that paper that he handed to Kim had three demands: all access to North Korea by U.S. inspectors, a halt to all activities related to chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons, and transfer of all nuclear materials to the U.S. In other words, the Libya scenario. And that's what Bolton had said last year when Kim and Trump met last time. He talked about the Libya scenario and it blew everything out of the water. So he actually presented to them the Libya scenario and said, you do all of this stuff and maybe we'll give you some sanctions relief. Of course, Kim's going to walk away. And he's going to walk away thinking, these guys aren't serious. So no wonder he goes to visit with Putin.
You know, it's sort of scary to think that that piece of paper had any significance. Like, you know, wouldn't an individual think they'll be thinking this through and know exactly what it is, and he doesn't have a piece of paper? And it's sort of like, this is the, we've just got the instructions from higher up. You know, the neocon boss has sent it. Or we want to remind you, these are the three things that you have to do. And of course, that's when things change. But the North Koreans have had a suggestion about the negotiation because they don't especially like Pompeo.
Yeah.
They say what U.S. needs is somebody more cautious and more mature. I guess we couldn't argue too much with that.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, a year or so ago, I mean, it was so easy because of our media to look at Kim and say, this guy is, you know, goofy and all that. But all of a sudden, his image, I think, has definitely changed on the world stage. And it looks like he's a little bit shrewder now, right now. And he's shifted gears. There's no doubt about it. And it'll be interesting to see what will come out of this thing. I can't see any major harm coming from it. It embarrasses us, I think, to a degree. It represents our weakening position. Hopefully, it doesn't mean that it means we have to bomb more people and kill more people to show that we're tough, but also become more realistic. But so far, we never see that the failures have much of an influence on their policy. Just the fact that their strategy with North Korea you know, really hasn't worked, and the strategy with Libya and all these other countries, it doesn't work. But they never seem to think, well, maybe we're on the wrong track here, you know, and we'll have to try something new. Well, Kim is trying something a little bit different right now. It is, I think, very interesting, and maybe this week we'll hear some interesting news or breakthroughs that will encourage us to revisit this issue.
Yeah, and you know, you make a good point about the image of Kim in the U.S. You know, he's kooky. That was all the propaganda, because they wanted to establish him as a madman with his finger on the nuclear trigger. And that's, you remember, that's what they did to Saddam Hussein, to Gaddafi. All of these guys are goofy. They make them look unstable. And they will not allow them to be seen as rational actors. Well, as we found out now, Kim is acting like a pretty rational actor. He's given a bad deal. The U.S. even called it, here's a big deal that they're going to hand him. He was given a bum deal by Bolton. He said, no, I'm walking away. And he's instead going to talk to Putin about cooperation. And, you know, Putin has already called for sanctions to be eased. So he's going somewhere where there's going to be potentially a productive meeting rather than you do this and maybe we'll do something. What's at stake? Russia's looking to cooperate with North Korea with some of their mineral resources. Russia would like to take a look at those. The North Koreans, they need electricity supplies and they need help modernizing their infrastructure. So again, where the U.S. foreign policy consists of us telling people to do something or else, other countries like Russia are becoming bigger players on the scene because they're doing deals. You know, there's both sides benefit from this trade.
You would think that we should not be so insecure that we couldn't continue a suspension of the war games. But we're back doing it again, just to be in their face. And, you know, still sending our naval vessels over into the China Sea. And unfortunately, there are too many still in this country that claim that, you know, if we don't do it, they're going to invade us and take us over and all this thing. Well, I have concerns about the direction of our country, but I think some of it is self-made, that some of our loss of liberty didn't come from the North Koreans or even the Russians. Our threats come from our reaction and overreaction, whether it's militarily or making us more vulnerable in areas like this, but also, you know, financially. It just seems like the American people suffer the consequences too often, even in the area of civil liberties. You know, it is supposed to be our job to go over and we're told we have to go over there to protect our Constitution and our liberties. And think about it. Who's a threat to our Constitution and our liberties? It suggests very strongly that we're our own worst enemies when it comes to protecting liberty.
And, you know, you look at what the U.S. is doing versus what Russia's doing and how foolish our diplomacy is. How much better would it be if we didn't have these sanctions? U.S. companies could go over to North Korea and start participating in the upgrading of their infrastructure, start trading. How many jobs would that be for Americans? Instead, we're seeing the Chinese and the Russians are rebuilding Syria. They're also heavily involved in doing deals in Venezuela, in Iraq even. So everywhere, other countries are benefiting from these economic ties. Well, the only thing we can do is saber rattle and threaten other countries. It's really a damage to our own economy.
Do you think maybe we should suggest a follow-up call from the president to Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, yeah.
And go over that issue once again. Maybe we're spending our money in the wrong place, and maybe we should be worried about China and others surpassing us. But, you know, the other thing that comes up is the geography. You know, the Middle East was a long way off, and we had to go there. In Syria, for instance, if you were talking just about geography and what was actually going on there, Russia had a greater interest, long-term interest in Syria than we did. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you know, we're talking about a small country, North Korea, a small area, but they're literally linked, you know, to Russia.
Yeah.
Kim got on his train. He went from North Korea right into Russia.
Yeah.
So it is something that you know, encourages them to work things out, and that they have more of a justification for it than we have. Why do we have to go so far away? Besides, you know, just think of all the pollution that we create by burning up all that oil. You know?
Global warming.
Yeah.
Well, this is, you know, the first meeting between Kim and Putin, the first ever meeting. The last time a North Korean leader was in Russia was back in 2011, and that was Kim's father, Kim Jong-il. So this, you know, this could be a really significant opening, and he might find that he can actually do some deals. And it's not to praise, you know, Russia's diplomacy. It's to condemn the neocons and their isolationism. I mean, that we can't call it anything else than that. They're isolating the U.S. from the rest of the world.
Yes, and guess who gets blamed for isolationism?
We do.
We get the blame, and libertarianism gets the blame, and it makes no sense whatsoever. These neocons are the protectionists. Who's putting on the tariffs? Who's putting on the sanctions? Who's interfering with trade and travel and all these things? And yet, they're called people who are fighting for free trade and usually promoting internationalism in a negative fashion. Actually, that issue in itself sometimes has split some of the libertarians because there's a general principle that yes, we like more trade. And some leaning libertarians would be impressed with, well, if we can get the tariffs down, that's what we have to do. But once they get into this tariff war, they're not going down, you know, and they're not following the Constitution. And it's a dictation. It's either the international organizations or it's a dictate from our president, you know, way over what was intended in the Constitution, because the Congress should be much more involved and they should, you know, be emphasizing less tariffs or whatever they want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would just close by pointing out the obvious. The neocons are a cancer on the Trump presidency. I mean, it's an absolute disaster. They're destroying his presidency. I don't believe Trump is one of them, but I don't think he cares enough to tell them you're fired, which is what he should say. So we're going to drift along for a couple of years. We're going to get closer to war with Iran. Maybe we'll even have the war with Iran, which the neocons have wanted for a long time. The group, the gang that can't shoot straight, the guys that are always wrong, the guys that should be laughed off of the international stage. And thankfully, Kim Jong-un did a little bit of laugh. He said, I don't want to deal with Pompeo anymore. The guy's not serious. So hopefully other leaders will start doing this, because these people are not serious. And what's not funny about it is that all of our security is at stake.
Very good. And I think that today is a better day than yesterday, because if we have an announcement from the neocons, whether it's Pompeo or Bolton or even Haspel, people will realize, you know, even though many have already, they're going to realize, you know, it's a policy. That is part of the system. That is their job. They learn how to do it. And, you know, I've often thought about one of the corrections that we could make in our system, and even for all the politicians too. But, you know, when it comes to the judicial system and the prosecutors and all this, I think they should be, you know, under oath. These people shouldn't be telling these lies in an official capacity, but that isn't the case. They get away with it, but the lies have built up to the point now where whatever happens here in the next week, two, or month or so, we have to really question it. We have to look at what really is happening, look at the facts, rather than looking at the propaganda. And the one advantage that the opposition has, the neocons have, you know, access to the media. And they've been able to make most people in this country believe that the real contest, all we have to do is pump up the conservatives. The conservatives will oppose the liberals, and that's what we need, more of each. But that has nothing to do with what's going on. It has to do with philosophy. And the bilateral support for Keynesian economics, inflationism, the Federal Reserve, interventionist foreign policy, and a condition that we have to protect the people against themselves, even if it requires violating their own civil liberties. So people need a better understanding and have a clear concept of what liberty is all about and why the Constitution should be limited in scope, and that most of the responsibility and duties in this country would come from individuals and small units, rather than thinking that international government, world government, and even our massive federal government is the solution to making us a freer people and a safer people. So I think the answers are all around us. They've been available. They've been discussed for hundreds of years, if not longer. It's just that people get so tempted in getting taken care of in a free ride. So it's a tough job to campaign philosophically against those who promises free stuff. And that is, seems like what the campaign is all about this year, next year coming up. So the big question is you just stop and think, who's going to pay for this? Why are people buying into this and saying, oh yeah, free medical care and on? So it's a tough fight, and the worse the conditions get, the more the people are going to demand more free stuff. Yes, we have to demand one thing: personal liberty and responsibility. And believe me, we would all be much better off for it, and the world would be better off for it, because that is the road to peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.